can't be sure, because everything has gone muzzy. It's the tumor, I desperately want to think. Except I can't think that anymore because it isn't true. Yet this place is awakening parts of me I didn't know were there. I have no knowledge of ever being at the Magnolia Hotel in my life. But somehow I know that the road will bend at the top, and two valets will leap out from behind an invisible post. And they do. I also know that when I step out of the car, it will smell like orange blossoms. And it does. I know that the valet who greets me, bulbous nose, bristly wheat-colored hair, trim in his uniform, will have a deep, cranky voice with a slight accent from somewhere in the middle of the country. And look, there he is. I know this because I wrote him. I wrote about this whole place. But it isn't supposed to be real. Eliza? Eliza Fontaine? My head swims as it turns. A PA in a Dr. Roxanne ball cap rushes up. Thank God you're here. Let's get you to hair and makeup. The nameless grunt grabs my arm and guides me to a trailer on the other side of the parking lot. In the distance, I can see the tree line that leads to the bungalows. In the late day heat, the buildings shimmer and dance. I continue to smell that orange blossom scent, even though I don't see a single blossom anywhere. Unconnected brain pathways bang together like the metal balls in a Newton's cradle. I swear I've never been here, but I've been here. I looked at plenty of photos of this place online for research for the dots, but once again, my descriptions were so accurate. It's like my fiction made this place real. In the trailer, everyone talks to me at once. The makeup lady, a small, spidery woman with sad eyes, sits me down and starts caressing me with a powder puff. Water? Asks a PA wearing heavy perfume. Another PA takes my phone from me and plugs it into a charger. A young, pretty blonde with a headset and a clipboard sidles up next, pumping my hand forcefully. Roz Lowry, she says. It's awesome to meet you. Your agent reached out. I'm so happy we were able to make this work. Uh-huh. I try not to sound suicidal. My hand is slick with the lotion from her palms. Pretty cool that we're doing this here, huh? She sweeps an arm out the trailer's tiny window, gesturing to the monstrous hotel structure behind us. It is the color of raw chicken. It is an association I've made before. Amanda, the makeup artist, has me tilt my head back so she can apply false eyelashes. So, you're going on first? Roz says, somewhere above me. Taylor Swift is on after you, so Roxanne might ask you if you're a Taylor fan, which I hope you reply yes. Then she's going to ask you some pretty standard stuff about yourself. How old you are, where you went to school, that sort of thing. And why you wanted to write the book. You know, the questions we sent ahead of time. Try not to get too complicated with your answers. It's a live taping, so we won't be able to do retakes. Uh-huh. I murmur, feeling feathery makeup brushes swipe across my eyelids. I finished your book today, by the way, Roz says. Amazing and really heartbreaking. She offers a gleam of perfect white teeth. When my phone, sitting on a counter being charged, bleats, I jolt up. I see another number that I don't recognize, except this one is from Palm Springs. A sharp, hot feeling darts through my chest. I glance at the makeup artist. Can I take this? Sure thing, honey. She lets me slip out of the chair. Just make it quick, okay? We're on in about 10. I walk outside the trailer and start across the parking lot before I pick up.
This Eliza Fontaine?
It's a guy's voice. Yes.
This is Daryl from the Tranquility Resort. And your cousin's Gloucester called us. Said you're looking for a security image?
That's right. I stare down at my shadow. It slants crookedly across the lawn. I look like I've been dismembered. At the Shipstead Bar. I give him the date I'm looking for.
Well, unfortunately, I don't have security footage from that night. Our cameras were out. But I have Richie on the line from the Shipstead with me, and I think he can shed some light on what you need. Richie?
Hey, Richie says,
reluctantly, his voice gravelly and cautious.
Hi.
I can feel sudden sweat on my lower back. So yeah, Andrew described you, and I remember you. I mean, sure I do, because of the pool, you know? You were drinking stingers, which we rarely make.
Stingers?
And so was the lady sitting next to you.
The blonde? I ask incredulously. There was no way Gabby was drinking stingers. There was no way Gabby was drinking anything. My heart rockets. I can almost taste the stinger in my mouth. I can hear once again, Lowrider.
Nah, you met with a blonde, but she came in later. This lady had dark hair, like you.
My mouth opens. Are you sure? I don't remember that at all.
Your name's Eliza, right? I made a joke that she looked like your twin. It was like a second Eliza sat down. I called you two the Elizas. Then the black-haired lady looked at you and said something that must have really pissed you off. You looked livid.
Please, stop staring, I whisper.
And then she left. And then your friend with the curly hair arrived.
There's a pause and a cough.
So yeah, that's what I've got. Thank you, Rich.
Daryl breaks in. I'd forgot he'd been listening.
Miss Fontaine, does this help? I want to make sure you have what you need. Any friend of Andrew's is a friend of ours.
I whisper something that might be a yes or might be a no, and the call ends. I let my phone slide from my fingers. It clatters to the grass. A dark-haired woman. Another me. I'm less shocked than I should be, and that's what frightens me the most. I root around in my memory, and a few lights come on. I can sense someone sliding into the seat next to me. I'd smelled her drink first, then gazed at the brownish liquid in the triangular glass. I turned and looked, and she was sitting there, next to me, so poised and composed. I'd sucked in a breath. It was me. Me exactly. My same face, my same body, my same smile. I've been looking for you, she said. And then, please, stop staring. My heart isn't pounding anymore. I'm not even sure that it's beating. I've stopped next to a parked Range Rover. When I glance at my face in the window, I see her. Her eyes, her mouth, her cheekbones, her skin, even her expression. I whip around, swallowing a scream. And then her name. Except it's my name. And she isn't behind me. She isn't anywhere. But she was. At that bar. I just don't know who she is. From the Dots. Dot tried to pay attention as her aunt told her about her partying days with famous writers in New York. But it wasn't easy. Dorothy kept sipping at the stinger, more and more of it disappearing down her throat. Nothing seemed to be happening. So that was a good thing. A very good thing. But then, at one point, Dorothy leaned on her elbow and gave Dot a soapy smile.
I'm so happy you came out tonight, dear. Have I told you how much I missed you?
And then Dot saw it. A slump of her aunt's head, her chin slipping off her palm.
Oops, Dorothy said, giggling.
Dot took stock of the way her own body felt. She'd drunk half her stinger, but she was still lucid. Her hands weren't shaking. Her vision wasn't doubled. Her heart cracked inside her chest. So there it was. Like an old roof that could no longer withstand hurricane-force winds, Dorothy suddenly lost her composure. Her cheeks went from pale to flushed in seconds. Her eyes began to water. Her movements became florid and haphazard. When she smiled, she couldn't quite control her lips. Dorothy stared at her palms as if she'd never seen them before. Dot glanced around the restaurant, terrified that someone was on to what had happened.
but all of the businessmen and doctors and first dates were caught up in their own worlds. She was grateful for Dorothy's paranoid need for concealment. But Dot's expression must have given something away, because when she looked across the table, Dorothy was staring at her in sober understanding.
"What did you do?"
her aunt growled. Dot licked her lips. The stinger had formed a thick coating at the back of her throat. Dorothy stared at the drink in front of her. It was possible she saw two drinks instead of one, or maybe the drinks were spinning. Then she looked at Dot again.
"What did you do?"
"What did you do?" Dot asked quietly. "That drink was meant for me, not you." Dorothy's eyes widened.
"How dare you do this to me?
How dare you do it to me?"
"Did you know I have cancer?" Dorothy exploded. "Ovarian. I was going to tell you tonight. And now you've done it. You've probably ruined my chances of surviving."
She jumped up from the table. For a moment, she just stood there, peering around the restaurant. Her eyes narrowed on a back hallway that led to the kitchen. Then, clutching her chest, she took off for the back door, the one they always came through. Dot leapt up too. She had no idea whether to believe the cancer story or not. But before she followed her aunt, she glanced at the remainder of Dorothy's drink. She plucked it from the table, carried it to the bathroom, and poured the rest of it down the sink. She could feel the bathroom attendant's eyes on her, but she didn't look over. She didn't look at anyone. Then she went outside. Dorothy was half in the shadows in the alleyway behind the restaurant, bent over at the waist and making retching noises. She wiped her eyes, stood, and glared at Dot.
"What do you want?"
"Do you need me to get you a doctor? Do you need your stomach pumped? Before we call the police, that is. Because I am going to call the police." Dorothy blotted her mouth with her sleeve. Her nostrils flared.
"You win. You win, Dot."
"It isn't about winning."
"This wasn't what you think. I was trying to help you."
"How?" Dorothy stuck her nose in the air.
"Your drink wasn't going to kill you. It was just going to knock you out long enough that I could get you out of this town without you protesting. I was going to get you a doctor. You were going to be fine."
"You expect me to believe that?"
"You should."
"And where were we going to go?"
"Bolivia."
Dot scoffed. "Why there?"
"Have you ever been? I spent some time there a few years ago. It's so beautiful. And private."
"I thought you were in Africa." Dorothy's eyes were glassy.
"We were going to have a wonderful life."
"Why do you think I would want to have a wonderful life with you after what you've done?" The alley led to a busy avenue. Cars rushed past, their headlights bright. But she and Dorothy were in a pool of shadows. Dot doubted that a single driver saw them.
"And who's to say you wouldn't keep doing this to me? Keep drugging me? Keep poisoning me? All to keep me in your control?"
Dorothy looked disappointed.
"I'm sorry you see it that way, dear."
"How else can I see it? You slap me so that I'll cry and then you can hug me. You poison me so I can get sick and you can take care of me. It's insane."
"Clearly you've been listening to your mother. This is exactly the kind of thing she would say. I nursed you back to health, dear. It's not my fault you can't hold your liquor."
"So why not take me to a fucking hospital? Why hide me in your room and bring in creepy Dr. Singh whenever I need an IV?
"Dr. Singh is an old friend and..."
"Stop talking," Dot roared. "Just stop, okay? I know what's going on. I've tried to put this puzzle together a million different ways, hoping that this isn't the answer. But it's what I keep coming back with every time."
She felt tears come to her eyes.
"How long have you been hurting me? Did you come back just to hurt me some more? Did you hurt Thomas, too? Did you give him something to make him crazy? Were you the one who shot him?
Dorothy stepped away from her, her footsteps clumsy and heavy. She had a pinched, cruel smile.
So many questions.
Dot's blood turned cold. Just like that, she knew she was right.
How could you shoot your own child?
Dorothy rolled her eyes, then turned on her heel and ran across the alley. Her fur trailed behind her like a tail.
Hey!
Dot cried, running after her. Dorothy crossed the avenue. On the other side was a little bridge that overlooked the busy freeway below. Under the streetlight, her skin looked gray, and there was a sheen of sweat on her forehead. Dot had never seen her aunt sweat before. Dorothy was also clutching her throat, as though she was choking. Her eyes were bulging out, too. Dot was pretty sure she was doing it for show. She'd never felt that way all the times she'd been drugged.
You were going to kill me, too, Dot cried. You gave me something to bring on those seizures, something to make my condition worse, something that would get you on the cover of Los Angeles as the saint who saved her niece's life.
I can't believe you'd say such a thing, Dorothy sputtered.
Her vocal cords sounded pinched.
I would never do that. If it looked like that, it was set up that way.
By whom?
The doctors. Those nurses. And your mother. Oh, God, most definitely your mother. They all had it in for me. They had it in for me from the beginning.
No, they didn't.
Dorothy staggered to the overpass barrier. She curled her fingers over the edge, peering into the traffic.
They hated me. All of them hated me. Wouldn't let me in. No one would let me in. But I had one over on them. They were all so stupid.
Saliva spewed from her mouth. Her head lolled back on her neck. Maybe this was the real, true Dorothy, Dot thought with a pang. Maybe the woman she'd seen and known had been an elaborate act. A lookalike.
It's why we've had to be incognito, Dot persisted. You're not supposed to be here. You're not supposed to be out with me. You could get arrested.
Yes, because of your mother.
Dorothy rolled her eyes.
Have I told you that she was a pill even as a child?
She broke off and clutched her throat, making a gagging sound. Her mouth opened wide. Dot watched as she tried to draw in a breath. The color began to drain from her face. Dot wasn't sure how Dorothy could fake that. Dorothy? Dot asked tentatively, taking a small step toward her. Now her aunt was gasping. Her eyes rolled back toward her skull. She staggered toward the overpass railing. Her legs started to crumble as though her bones had been removed. She grappled for her throat. She was just supposed to pass out, Dot thought, like Dot always did. This poison wasn't supposed to make her lose function. It wasn't supposed to kill her. Dorothy slumped against the guardrail and gagged. This time, bile came up. Dot could smell it. Her aunt spit a long string of stomach juices and saliva all the way down to the moving traffic. Horrible sounds emerged from her lips. She burped raucously, then gagged again, then threw up some more. Even in the dim light, Dot was pretty sure it was blood. Dorothy, Dot whispered, trying to pull her up by the waist. Her aunt wouldn't budge. Out of options, Dot reached into her pocket and found her phone to call 911. She didn't look forward to the aftermath of this. Her mother finding out again, the doctors testing Dorothy's blood, a police investigation, a finger pointed at Dot, and then, of course, Dorothy herself going to jail. Maybe both of them going to jail. But she couldn't let her aunt die out here. Her fingers trembled as she pressed the buttons on her phone screen. Light illuminated against her face, and she pressed the 9. Then the overhead light burned out.
Dot looked up, staring at the streetlight, willing it to flicker on.
Dorothy? She called nervously. She could barely see a few feet in front of her.
She heard footsteps. Someone breathing. A hand shot forward and grabbed her wrist, knocking Dot's phone away. Dot felt her hip bone smash against the guardrail. She could smell her aunt's perfume and bile breath, so close. With surprising strength, Dorothy pushed Dot against the metal barrier and held her there.
If I'm dying, then you are too, Dorothy growled.
It didn't even sound like her voice, and it barely looked like her face. Someone else had taken over her body. Someone possessed. Dot felt her hips tip over the edge of the guardrail. Her head twisted, and she stared woozily at the traffic below. The car swept by so obliviously. If they happened to look up, all they'd see was blackness. Conjuring strength, she pushed hard against her aunt. Dorothy staggered backward with a grunt. Dot managed to tilt herself upright before Dorothy came raging back for her. She slid off the guardrail and ducked to the side, avoiding Dorothy's charging form. What made her grab her aunt's thin, shapely calves, she wasn't sure. What made her hoist those calves up, tipping the top half of her aunt's body to the guardrail, she couldn't say. She didn't intend to tilt her aunt so forcefully. And when she let go, she had no idea Dorothy was angled so far over the guardrail that most of her body dangled over the edge. As soon as her fingers freed themselves from those ankles, though, Dorothy's whole body slipped away effortlessly. Dot whirled around and gasped, instantly understanding what she'd done. She lunged for her aunt's tumbling feet, but it was too late. Her fingers grappled darkness and air. Dot peered over the guardrail and screamed. It was so dark, and there was no sound of her aunt's fall. But maybe that's because the highway was too far down for her to hear. The cars kept rushing, their headlights betraying nothing. But Dorothy was definitely down there. Soon enough, someone was going to hit her. And soon enough, they would be looking upward, trying to figure out what had happened. She turned and ran. Eliza. Oh God. There it is. There it is. I'm dizzy. My vision is cloudy. I'm wavering in my seat at the bar. But I can make out a body sliding into the stool next to mine. I smell the bergamot oranges and the sickening creamy mintiness of the stinger. Everything inside me goes still. And when I look over, there she is. Me. And not me. It can't be possible. It can't. It was part of a dream. The worst part is, I don't even know who I'm afraid of. Myself? A clone of myself? An evil twin? Stop staring, she said. I knew the voice. I need to talk to you. I need you to listen. Miss Fontaine? Roz is touching my arm. I realize I am standing in the parking lot with my phone in my hand. She looks at me cautiously, her clipboard under her arm. We need to get you back in hair and makeup. Her mouth makes an O when she peers into my face. Are you okay? I am desperate to muster a smile, but it's probably more of a snaggle-toothed cringe. Roz pats my shoulder. Hey, it's going to be great. Just relax. If it's any consolation, Katie's out there right now getting the audience drunk. They're going to think everything you say to Roxanne is positively scintillating. She extends her arm and leads me back to the trailer. My stomach heaves, and for a moment my vision tilts. But I manage to remain upright. Somehow, I get up the stairs. The makeup artist says nothing about my greasy face. She hums as she puts on my lipstick. Now, go like this, she says, popping her lips together. I pop, too. I'm amazed I can pop. Roxanne's about to go on for her introductions, Roz says. You're first, Eliza. Get ready. I'm a zombie as she walks me down the trailer steps and across the lawn. When we get to the blue curtain, she tells me to stop. Wait here, and she'll call your name, and then you'll walk through there. Roz parts the curtain just slightly to reveal a makeshift set inside a gazebo festooned with flowers. 6 cameras are trained on Roxanne, who has ash blonde hair cut to her chin and wears a white doctor's coat. I wish, suddenly, she was a real doctor, and that I could be lying on a bed, hospitalized. I wipe my sweaty palms on my pants. A sound tech rushes over and rechecks the microphone he's threaded up my blouse and into my ear. But when I turn my head just so, I see her. It's just a flash of light and skin, a wink from a full-length mirror a few feet away from the curtain. When I look closer, I see my face staring back. Only the me in the mirror flashes an eerie smile I don't think I know how to make. I yelp and turn around so quickly that the cord of the microphone goes taut in the sound tech's fingers. The microphone clip leaps off my blouse.
Oops,
the sound tech murmurs.
Can you stay still for me, honey?
I stare into the mirror again. The reflection is gone. I glance at Roz, who's looking at me questioningly.
Are guests allowed backstage?
Nope, they're all in the bleachers. And you got off easy. It's a small group compared to when we shoot on our normal set. She studies me, then tucks in her chin and speaks into her microphone.
Amanda, can you get out here? Eliza needs a touch-up.
Already? I can hear the makeup artist complain through the headset. Yes, Amanda. Already. I study the mirror again. Still nothing. But it doesn't matter. I saw it. I know she's here. Now that I believe in her, I suddenly believe in everything. All those shadows I wrote off as nothing. All those feelings I was being watched. All those eerie, uncanny prickles on the back of my neck. The mysterious video on my phone in the hospital room. The reason I felt so afraid when I ran toward the pool at the Tranquility. The reason I fled from the bar at the Tranquility when I was with Desmond. It's her. This strange second Eliza is everywhere, as magical and omnipotent as Santa Claus. Someone on the other side of the curtain calls for quiet. There's saxophone music and applause, and the host begins to talk. Roz hears something through her headset and scuttles away a few paces. I look around freely. There are more cabanas behind us, chaises and thick palms. She's crouching somewhere. I can feel her readying a laugh. I want to comb through the plants until I find her.
Eliza!
Roz is back by my side, poking my arm.
Go!
The host must have called my name, because the audience is clapping. I am pushed through the curtain. The cameras swivel over and record me as I stand, transfixed. I tried to smile, but my fear has taken control of the muscles of my face. Past the cameras, I see an audience sitting in grandstand-style seats. One figure stands out from the others. My heart jumps all the way up to my brain. I point at her.
You!
The me in the audience touches her breast. Her lips part. Shapes rearrange, and it's a middle-aged woman, well-dressed, with red lipstick and a big handbag on her lap. The kaleidoscope turns again. Now it's all Eliza's in the audience. 100 clones of me, out for blood. I blink. It's back to bleachers of strangers. I wheel around to Roxanne.
Help me,
I whisper, not loud enough for the microphone to pick up.
Eliza, Roxanne beckons from the couch. Come over here, darling, and let's talk about this amazing new book of yours.
I see an excited expression on her face, but I don't know how to respond to it. I can feel the sweat running down my forehead.
I know you're here, I say loudly. I know what you're doing.
Pardon? Roxanne asks. My gaze sweeps the set again. Cameras, tech people, audience, blue Los Angeles sky.
Just come out. Show me who you are.
Eliza, Roz hisses from the wings.
What the hell?
Roxanne, still standing, smiles at the audience.
I believe we're having some technical difficulties, so this might be a good time to break for commercial.
No! A voice hisses from stage right. Keep going! This is great!
Roxanne presses her lips together. Behind her, I see a glint of light followed by a flash of dark. It's the other me. I lunge for it. The audience screams. Roxanne steps away from my outstretched arms, stumbling in her high heels. But I barely notice her. I reach the chairs and shove them aside, their legs making angry scrapes against the concrete. I peer behind the Dr. Roxanne banner. There's a small, landscaped Eden full of flowering plants. A rippling pond burbles happily. I know this pond, I realize. I sat here one morning, wickedly hungover, and pitched pennies into its lower tier.
No, you didn't, a voice inside me shouts. Dot did. Not you.
But I did. I did. I fumble out from behind the curtain and face the audience.
Where are you? Come out so I can talk to you.
I can hear my ragged breathing. I can sense the expression on my face. And yet I can't stop myself. I can't stop any of this.
We're going to commercial, Roxanne decides, walking straight for the camera.
There's that loud buzz. The director reluctantly yells cut. The audience's murmurs grow louder. Everyone is staring at me. Roxanne scuttles off the set. Roz hurries over to me.
Eliza, she whispers.
She doesn't sound angry anymore. More like shaken and frightened.
I think it would be best if you came backstage with me, okay?
No!
I say it so forcefully, spit flies out of my mouth, landing on her cheek.
You're clearly having some sort of moment. It's upsetting our guests.
I'm being hunted. It's not going to stop until I'm dead.
Roz notices my microphone and pulls it off my shirt.
If you just come backstage, if you have some water, we'll get this sorted out.
Don't you understand? I scream. I'm in danger. I'm in danger.
A gasp from the onlookers.
Stop!
Someone else screams, and I feel hands pulling me backward.
Eliza, stop!
I stare down at myself. Somehow, I've grabbed Roz's shirt, and I'm shaking her.
I'm sorry, I start to say, but Roz has already turned backstage.
I turn around to assess whoever has pulled me backward. A tall, hefty security guard with a shaved head takes my arm.
Time to go, miss.
I stare at his dark, fleshy fingers around my biceps.
Where are you taking me?
Off the property. If you go quietly, no one will press charges.
I dig in my heels.
Don't leave me out there alone. She'll find me.
His expression hardens.
You've created enough of a disturbance. Let's go.
Please. I beg. I can feel the tears running down my cheeks. Please, I'm scared.
We push through the cut in the curtains. The whole production team is standing there. Amanda, the makeup lady. Kathy, who blow-dried my hair. About 50 PAs. They are staring, slack-jawed. I sense the Eliza vibration again, and the world starts to wobble. Nerves snap at the surface of my skin. I can feel my legs crumpling. And suddenly, I'm on the ground. I can't move. At least, if I stay here, I'm around people. And she won't get me.
Miss Fontaine.
The guard yanks at my arm.
Get up.
I can't, I whisper. Don't make me. Don't leave me alone.
Get up.
I've got her. It's a new voice. One I know. Bill stands above me. I peer at him, fearful, paranoid. Why is he here? I wonder, suddenly, if he's also in on the plot. Maybe they all are. Maybe they all know who this woman is who's lurking around ready to hurt me. Maybe they're all best friends. I scuttle away from him.
Leave me alone!
But Bill is quicker, and he scoops me up under my arms. I kick my legs, trying to get free.
Eliza, honey, stop, okay? Please stop. It's me. I'm not going to hurt you.
How do I know that? How do I know anything?
I knew this was going to be too much for you. Your mother and I both said, we're going to get you help, okay? You're going to be fine.
He drags me past the craft services table, where about 20 more people who work on the show stare at us in astonishment.
But she's here, I say. I know it, and she's going to follow me out here. She's going to follow us.
Just come on. Let's not talk about this here.
Still holding me, Bill drags me away from the set and down a leafy path. The sun bores down on my head. In the distance, I can hear the audience applauding. It's strange to think that Dr. Roxanne has gone on as though nothing is amiss. Meanwhile, my life is crumbling before my eyes. Bill takes me through a pool gate and sits me down on a lounge chair. The pool area is empty. Every table offers a neat stack of towels. A hot tub burbles to the left. It's tranquil, but the desolation unnerves me. As soon as I sit down, I start to tremble from head to toe.
Why are you here? I ask Bill. What are you doing?
Bill sits next to me.
I was afraid something like this might happen. Gabby told us what she told you about the pool. We had a feeling you might start putting the pieces together.
What pieces? What are you talking about?
How about you start by telling me who you're afraid of, and maybe I can explain.
There's a lump in my throat. So he does know who she is. Part of me wants to bolt, but his voice is so trusting and gentle. I want to believe he won't hurt me. This woman, she looks just like me. I've seen her everywhere. I think she wants to hurt me. For real, Bill. Not like the other times. At least, I don't think so. I peek at him. You know who she is, don't you? And you're not telling me. No one is telling me. Am I right?
Bill's hands loosen from my legs. A look I can't decipher at first floods his face. Regret, maybe. Devastation. He takes a long breath. You're right. I do know her. I believe you're talking about your aunt. But she's dead.
I recoil. What aunt?
Your mother's sister. Her name was Eleanor. Eleanor Reitman. You two look exactly the same.
I jolt away from him. What are you talking about?
It's natural you're terrified of her. She's been trying to kill you for years. In the hospital when you were young, and then after. But she's dead, Eliza. She really is. She was hit by a car when you pushed her over that overpass.
I rear back. No. No. That was Dot and Dorothy. From my book. That was in my book.
Eliza, calm down, okay? Calm down. She is Dorothy. And you are Dot. You're the exact same, just with different names. You disassociated. You created Dot, and your book was a way of dealing with what happened to you. Don't you understand? This is why we were so upset about your book when we finally read it. This is why we don't want you to publish it. This is why your mother unsuccessfully tackled you in that parking lot. She was hoping, well, I guess she hoped you would come home with her willingly, and that she could convince you somehow to call your editor yourself and pull the book. We hadn't really planned it all out. We just knew we had to do something.
I feel like my whole body is tumbling down a deep, deep well. Its side slick and full of spiders. Its bottom miles away. None of this is possible. I can't have forgotten a whole fucking aunt.
But you did. It's understandable, Eliza. Explainable. Horrible things happened a year and a half ago. Horrible things we should have stopped, had we known. All we could do was try to cover it up after the fact and protect you from further damage. Hide what you did from the police. Try to find you treatment. We all understood why you did it, honey. We knew what she was doing to you, unfortunately, when it was too late. So we sought out a doctor to remove those memories. He had this method that he used on PTSD patients, a mix of drugs and a whole lot of psychotherapy. It was supposed to work. What it did instead was shove the memories into a bottom drawer. They were always there, though, and the emotion was always there. The fear. It broke through in your book. And now it's breaking through for real in other ways, too. There's suddenly a tinny taste in my mouth. What happened a year and a half ago? Everything in your book. Aunt Eleanor hurting you in the hospital. Aunt Eleanor coming back into town. That dinner out. Her death. I stare at him. Are you suggesting what I wrote is true? He looks pained. Yes. Even the part where Dot... where I can't even say it out loud. Bill's hands grip mine hard. It's why you kept diving into those pools. You felt guilty, responsible, and unsettled. There was no body for the service. You kept thinking she was still alive, and that terrified you. So, like I said, we got you help. You couldn't go on like that. We had to do something. I widen my eyes. More pieces snap together. I didn't have a brain tumor, did I? That's why there's no record of me at UCLA. I checked, you know. I made a fool out of myself, claiming I was sick when I wasn't. I even got an MRI because I thought the tumor came back. He licks his lips. You had a mass as a child, but it was benign, and everything was removed. But not last year. That's just what we told you. It was a more rational story. And no, you weren't at UCLA. You were somewhere else. I'm horrified. Doing that other thing. That PTSD bullshit. He looks wrecked. It's very cutting edge. Scientists have targeted genes that make proteins that either enhance memory or interfere with it. There's a new drug that acts on those genes, turns them off, so certain memories are suppressed. You talk to a therapist a lot, too. He had you do hypnosis a lot. And for a while, you seemed cured. You forgot. And that seemed like the best thing for you. We thought we were protecting you. From the police. And from yourself. Bile rises in my throat. I wouldn't agree to that. It sounds like bullshit. Well, we forced you to. We got a court document and everything. But you probably don't remember. And, well, it was bullshit, kind of. Because instead of you forgetting, you created Dot. He presses his hands to his eyes. We thought the process had worked. You seemed so well, so happy. And we thought that when you were writing a novel, it was about something else. We should have asked you to see it far sooner than we did. We shouldn't have believed you when you said it wasn't going to be published for a long time. We just didn't want to push. We were afraid you were fragile, so we let it go. But we're afraid people will read it and realize that it's true. We don't want anything to happen to you, Eliza. You shouldn't be punished for what you did. I didn't do it, I insist. I mean, Dorothy, Eleanor, isn't even dead. She was with me at the shipstead at the Tranquility the night Gabby pushed me into the pool. A bartender saw her, and she's here, now. I've seen her everywhere. Something else strikes me. For all I know, she's impersonating me, all over town. People have seen me out and about, at yoga studios, at the shop I work at clubs.
but I distinctly remember not being in those places. It's like she's trying to take over my life. Just saying it chills me. Could it be true?
Bill shakes his head. Eleanor is dead, I promise you.
I look at him through tears. How can you be so sure?
Because the police told us so. It was her ID, but she was taken away. I guess she didn't want any of us to see her. But it was her, Eliza. I promise you.
I blink hard, trying to let this sink in. It just doesn't seem possible. And you're sure I did it?
He nods sadly.
How are you sure?
Because you kept saying so. You said it over and over. You were like Lady Macbeth, possessed.
I shut my eyes. All of a sudden, an image swims against my closed eyelids. I see two women standing near a highway overpass. One of them is an older, pretty woman wrapped in a fur. Her shoulders are hunched, and her mouth is open in a scream. Behind her is the guardrail. To the left glows the sign for St. Mother Maria's. Orbs of neon headlights gleam below. Then I look at the person next to her. She's yelling too, and though I can't see what she's wearing, something in the foreground cuts out the lower half of her, only showing her face. She looks awfully familiar. She is standing in the same way I pictured Dot in those final moments. It's possible she's thinking what Dot was thinking in those final moments. I look at Bill in horror. It wasn't me. It wasn't me. But even as the words spill from my mouth, I'm not sure I believe them anymore. Because it was me. It couldn't be anyone else. This seems to unlock a door, because memories smash through a wall. The feeling is almost palpable. I want to cover my head to protect myself from the deluge. All Dot's memories can't be mine. They can't. But then I try it out. Eleanor Reitman, my aunt. And there it comes, spilling over the dam. Little me, prancing through a beautiful room at the Magnolia Hotel, trying on gowns in Eleanor Reitman's closet. Little me, playing Oscar night, coming out in a gown way too long for me, answering Eleanor's questions about who I was wearing. Wednesday Adams Couture, I always said, and what my beauty tips were. No sleep, lots of cookies. Little me, playing funeral, lying in that silk coffin, the two of us giggling, my arms reaching out for my mother to come play too. Sometimes she'd join in, but others she'd rush off, late for work. Little me in the hospital, miserable, terrified. Aunt Eleanor bursting through in that silk-wrapped dress, carrying that Chanel bag, making everything perfect. Stella the lookalike taking my blood pressure. Los Angeles Magazine, the ICU. Me hearing my doctor's voice yelling at someone outside the hall. Eleanor's frostiness. Her paranoia. Don't tell them anything. I hear her voice through the phone. Bill and Gabby coming to the door of our house. Me pouring that glass of vodka. Gabby looking on with wide, spooked eyes. Maybe you shouldn't be doing that, she'd said. But not because it was taboo. Because I'd been sick. Because she felt sorry for what I'd been through. They'd told her everything, including the part about Eleanor. That's why Gabby took the blame. That's also why Gabby didn't want to rehash it days ago. Memories come back of my mother changing on me, growing silent, angry, telling me Eleanor was in France, then taking it back. And then seeing myself meeting Eleanor in the parking lot near school, my ass in that booth at M&F, taking that sip of champagne.
Leonidas, there he is. And I, going out with Eleanor to that club.
My mother hunting me down the morning I awoke woozy and sick in Eleanor's suite.
Telling me the truth.
Me not believing it.
Doubt creeping in.
Leonidas making me promise not to see her that last night.
But I went anyway.
I can hear myself screaming, but I can't stop. I cover my ears to block out the sound, but it just echoes inside my head. I can feel my knees buckling again. And from the end of a long, long tunnel, I have the vague sense that Bill is trying to lift me to stand. My legs are limp and boneless. I can't move. The memories bulldoze on, crashing, crashing. Details I'd packed into the novel. Aunt Eleanor, handing keys over to my mother so she could take possession of her chopped-up, meringue-like house in the Hollywood Hills.
"It's the least I can do, Francesca," she said. "At least accept this."
And my mother looked so angry, so doomed.
But we moved in, hadn't we? Waking up in Eleanor's bed at the Magnolia and seeing her slow dancing with Dr. Singh in the front room. And afterward, after she was dead, Leonidas looming over me at the pizza parlor, which I'd stumbled to, fled to a back hallway and stayed there. I remember smelling Eleanor's bile on my hands and nearly puking. Leonidas was furious at me because I'd gone against his wishes, but he said that at least we could go to the police now.
"No, we can't," I said. "She's dead. She's dead."
"Quiet," he hissed, glancing in horror over his shoulder. We were only steps away from the pizza ovens, but the music was cranked so loud it didn't seem like the guys working behind the counter heard us. Still, Leonidas deadlifted me and dragged me out an emergency exit at the back.
"You can't go around saying that," he moaned. "Eliza, we have to get you out of here."
But instead of going back to the dorms, I found myself at my parents' front door. My mother opened it and went pale. Bill pushed through and grabbed me by the arms before I fainted.
"What did you do?"
he whispered.
"Eliza, what did you do?"
I blurted it all out. Everything, in lurid detail, starting with Eleanor showing up at my dorm that morning. Then I got to my revelation about what she'd done to Thomas, and then how Dorothy, Eleanor, had confirmed it. My mother went white.
"No," she said. "Thomas shot himself. With that gun."
"You really believe that?" My laugh was cruel. "Dorothy did something to him to poison his mind, and then took him to doctor after doctor, trying to get pity, trying to get attention. Exactly in the way someone with Munchausen syndrome by proxy works. You're the one who schooled me on this disease. You should have made the connection. Maybe he pulled the trigger of that gun. We'll never know. But she was the one who basically put it in his hands." I shake my head.
"How can you not see? How can you look at my situation and not understand what she did to him?"
My mother pressed her hand to her mouth. But there was a light in her eyes. All sorts of emotions crossed her face. Horror, guilt maybe, regret. And then she shot into action. "Get inside," she told me, pressing her hands on my shoulders. "You're not talking to anyone else about this. No one. We'll do the talking for you. What you did out of self-defense. But it's better if people don't even know about it. Okay, Eliza? Okay?" Then the memories come to a screeching halt. My brain goes still and silent. I open my eyes and look around. Bill has sat me down on a chaise inside the pool area. The water is flat, untouched glass. I can hear a Taylor Swift song lilting from the Dr. Roxanne set. I have to stand. I have to move. I jiggle my legs and arms wildly, hoping to shake the memories free. I need to get rid of this brain, rid of myself. that I have forgotten something so huge, so devastating, seems like a crime in itself. I rise and stagger away from Bill, half blind.
Eliza?
I hear Bill calling out.
Eliza, what are you?
And then I see it. A rippling, blue, welcome respite. I tumble toward it, arms wheeling around. And then I leap. The space between ground and water is lovely. I wish I could open my arms and fly. As soon as I hit the water, the pain inside me begins to dull. The voices stop. The memories subside. I open my eyes and enjoy the blue bubbles. I give in to sinking. My lungs start to give out, but something inside me tells me that I just need to wait. It will feel bad, but then it will get better. And then the pain will be gone. From the Dots. That same evening, Dot felt drunk as soon as she opened her eyes. The room wobbled vertiginously, and her stomach burned with acid. She was in her old bedroom at her parents' house. She couldn't quite remember how she'd gotten there. Something was happening outside the house. She pushed back the curtain on the window. A police car rolled into the driveway. She cracked open the bedroom door and listened as an officer stepped into the foyer and talked to her mother. The cop said Dorothy's name. Dot's throat tightened, everything she'd done tumbling back to her. This was it. She had to confess. She opened the door wider and readied herself. But then her stepfather appeared from out of nowhere and clapped his hand over her mouth. "Shh," he whispered, widening his eyes in warning. Dot stared at him, puzzled. He pushed her back into her room. Downstairs, soft murmuring.
"Can you describe your relationship with your sister?"
Dot's mother answered, but Dot couldn't make out what she said. The conversation lasted another minute or so, and then the door shut. Her mother appeared up the stairs, her head bowed. Dot's stepfather moved aside to let her into Dot's room. Dot scrambled back to her bed, afraid of what was to come. But Dot's mother's face was kind when she entered the room. She walked up to Dot and took her hands. "That was the police," she said evenly, "about Dorothy. They have her body at the morgue." Dot breathed in. She searched her mother's face, but her mother wouldn't meet her gaze. "Oh," was all she could think to say. "The police wanted to talk to you, but I said you hadn't seen her in 10 years. She finally looked up at Dot. "Do you understand?" Dot licked her lips. "But that's not true." "Yes, it is." "But I, no buts," her mother said steadily. "We talked about this." Dot swallowed. She watched as her mother and stepfather exchanged a glance over her head. "But people saw us," she said softly. "People at the restaurant. That steakhouse." "I don't think that will be a problem." Again, Dot tried to catch her mother's gaze, but she wouldn't look in her direction. "Can I see her body?" she asked. She needed to prove to herself it had really happened, that Dorothy was really gone. It was still unthinkable that any of it had happened. The poisoning, the manipulation, to her, Dorothy's alleged favorite. How could she have done such a thing? How could Dot have let it go on for so long? Would a smarter girl have caught on sooner? Her parents exchanged a shocked glance. "Absolutely not," her mother said. And then her parents stood up and left the room. "Stay here," they told her. "Don't you dare leave." To Dot's horror, there was a memorial held for Dorothy, and Dot's family insisted she go. Not going would arouse suspicion. "Just act normal," they told her. "Don't talk to anyone." It was held at M&F Chop House. There were steaks for all, and unlimited drinks. The mood was buoyant and Hollyweird. Bartenders in white jackets and turbans mixed martinis. Someone circulated with a platter full of Cuban cigars. There was a woman walking around with a monkey on her shoulder. Both were wearing tiaras. A couple of Vegas showgirls performed,